grabbingly great station.
What do you like?
I love picnics.
What do you like?
I like me first, then my sisters and brothers.
What do you like?
Hitting this tin can with a spoon.
Ah. What do you like?
Messing up a room.
What do you like?
I like pina coladas.
What do you like?
Dead burnt bodies.
What do you like?
Sadists, known perverts, and Mormons.
What do you like?
Noise! Noise! Yeah, noise! Noise!
It is 11:30 a.m. on a Wednesday. You know what that means. It's time for a noise, as it is every Wednesday here at the Almighty CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. What a beautiful day out. And we have a very beautiful show planned for you the next hour and a half. Two features that we're going to be doing. The first half hour of the show is a very special event taking place Saturday, February 7th, 2009 at 11:55 p.m. at the Rio Theater, 1660 East Broadway at Commercial Drive. You know where the Rio is. Well, they've been showing a lot of great, fantastic underground cult films Fridays and Saturday nights. Well, the last couple of months, they've joined forces with, I believe, Black Dog Video, fantastic store. And this weekend, they're showing two of the ultimate and two of the first original midnight movies. They are showing Eraserhead, and at right after that, they are showing my favorite flick of all time, El Topo, Alejandro Jodorowsky's fantastic psychedelic Western masterpiece. So for the first half hour, we're going to be focusing on the music of El Topo and the incredible soundtrack that went with it. In case you didn't know, let's see, I got my notes here. El Topo in 1970 made an allegorical cult Western movie, an underground film characterized by its bizarre characters and occurrences, use of maimed and dwarf performers, heavy doses of Christian symbolism and Eastern philosophy. The film is about the eponymous character, a violent black-clad gunfighter, and his quest for enlightenment. For many years, the film could only be seen at midnight screenings and art houses and bootlegs. Little story is, it was originally released in 1970 in New York. John Lennon and Yoko Ono went and saw the flick, thought it was fantastic, got Alejandro Jodorowsky, the director and creator of El Topo, in touch with Mr. Alan Klein. If there's any Rolling Stones fans out there or Beatles fans, you might know who he is. He is the savvy, cutthroat manager of the Rolling Stones and eventually became the Beatles manager near the end of their career. He took on El Topo, re-released it, and hired him to do the story of O, the great bondage S&M erotic classic novel. And up until the very day of sitting down with the investors, Jodorowsky left him high and dry. He said, I can't do this. I'm not going to do this. This goes against my artistic, you know, belief and vision. Alan Klein, in an absolute furious rage, vowed that El Topo would never be seen by anyone ever again. And in 1972, he took the original print and locked it in a vault forever, and it was never seen again, basically. And it cropped up once in a while on bootlegs. The bootleg that I first saw it on was the film's originally in Spanish. I saw it in Spanish with English overdubs with Japanese subtitles, so figure that one out. But they finally made their peace. Alejandro Jodorowsky and Alan Klein have finally worked it out. And last year, a incredible 6-DVD box set came out of all of his films. El Topo has finally been digitally remastered, and compared to the many, many bootlegs and prints that were existing in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, this looks absolutely like a blind person seeing for the first time. It's absolutely gorgeous. And that'll be the print that they're showing at the Rio Theater. But for right now, we're going to start our half-hour spotlight on El Topo and the music therein. Enjoy.
Be prepared to live the most wonderful experience of your life. Alejandro Jodorowsky's film classic, El Topo. El Topo is not a Western. It goes far beyond any Western. El Topo is not a religious film. It contains all religions.
Thank you.
It is a mystic film. El Topo is bloody. It is sexual. El Topo is miraculous and terrible. It's funny. It's violent. El Topo is monstrous and cruel. El Topo is more than spectacle. It is an experience for all of your life. We'll be right back.
CITR 101.9 FM. This show is a noise. We're featuring the music of Alejandro Jodorowsky today for the first half hour. And what you just heard there was a promotional 7-inch that came out in 1971 to promote the major, I guess, major release of the film El Topo. That was a 7-inch only sent out to radio stations. And it was a flautist by the name of Paul Horn with a track called The Desert is a Circle with a variation on the main title theme from El Topo. However, there was another record that was released in honor of El Topo as well, much more sought after, not by film critics and not by weirdos like me, but by hip-hop DJs. And the album was called Music of El Topo by a group called Shades of Joy, arranged and conducted by Martin Fierro. These guys from San Francisco saw El Topo, were absolutely mind-blown by it. Ask Alejandro Jodorowsky if it was all right for them to do variations on his soundtrack that he wrote himself. And the end result is some of the funkiest early 70s breakbeat. It's insane. It's insane jazz funk. And there are tons of DJs out there who use this record for breaks and stuff like that and beats, making it very, very sought after and very, very rare. It's found for lots of money on eBay. It has finally been re-released on 180 gram vinyl, but we have the original right here, and this is just killer. This is Shades of Joy with that track you just heard there, but their own variation of it. And we're actually going to play some the original El Topo soundtrack, and then we're going to play you Shades of Joy's version as well. This is Shades of Joy with A Desert is a Circle. Thank you. In your face, Avi Shack. That is some rare, rare 1970s junk, as I like to call it, jazz funk. Shades of Joy from the Bay Area off of the Music of El Topo album. And like I said to the caller, I don't normally play that kind of stuff, but the reason why we are spinning that is because this Saturday at midnight, double feature at the Rio, El Topo and Eraserhead. Come on out. It's going to be a blast. If you've never seen, well, if you've never seen either flick, I hope the majority of CITR listeners have seen El Topo, or I've seen Eraserhead before. But if you haven't seen El Topo, come on down and check it out. It's, if you want to see monks get whipped with cactus, you want to see disemboweled donkeys, you want to see 300 dead rabbits, do you want to see self-immolation, come and check it out. It's vile, it's disgusting, it's allegorical, it's religious, it's misogynistic, it's pretentious. It's my favorite movie of all time. You're listening to A Noise here, CITR 101.9. Luke Meat here at the helm. Lots going on this week that I've got to talk about before I get to the next thing on the show. Coming up, we have an interview, one-hour documentary, an interview with Mr. Charles Spearin from Broken Social Scene and Do Make Say Think. And he has a wonderful new solo album out that we talk about, and definitely fits up the alley of this show. But the Push Festival is going on right now. I was at an event last night. Steve Reich is drumming. It was utterly phenomenal. However, this Sunday, pretty cool stuff. Bang on a Can All-Stars are playing. If you like the Kronos Quartet, you'll love these guys. They're doing works by Brian Eno and Sonic Youth's Thurston Moore. So if you want to see a string quartet, do some Brian Eno and some Thurston Moore weirdness at the Chan Center, give me a call here. I got a pair of tickets to give away. 822-2487. That is the Bang on a Can All-Stars at the Chan Center. If you've never seen a show at the Chan Center, my God, there are no 90-degree angles in that building. It's acoustically perfect. So, yeah. And we'll be back to talk to you right after this.
Push Festival, one of Western Canada's largest performing arts festivals in association with Theatre Conspiracy, presents Club Push, a festival within the festival at Performance Works on Granville Island. $20 gets you in to check out an innovative performance, a band, or a DJ. After 11 p.m., it's free. Tuesday through Sunday, January 27th to February 7th. Visit pushfestival.ca or call 604-605-8284 for information and the full Club Push lineup. Licensed and chill, it's the best time you'll have for $20.
On February 8th at 8 p.m., the Chan Center and the Push Festival present New York City's avant-garde ensemble, Bang on a Can All-Stars, part rock band, part amplified chamber group, performing works by Brian Eno, and from Sonic Youth, Thurston Moore. And on February 15th at 8 p.m., the Chan Center and Kickstart Disability Arts and Culture present Waits, a live performance with Lynn Manning. A riveting one-man play told by actor-storyteller Lynn Manning about how his life changed forever when a bullet shot in a crowded Los Angeles bar robbed him of his sight. The show opens with BC singer-songwriter and recent Canadian Aboriginal Music Award winner Krista Couture. Tickets at Ticketmaster, student ticket pricing available for both shows. For more information, visit chancenter.com.
My goodness, I felt like one of the secretaries in Mad Men there. That was bananas. Congratulations to Deborah and Mike. You got a pair each to Bang on a Can All-Stars. A story to the other callers. But stay tuned. We've got some pretty special stuff coming up the next hour of the show. Charles Spearin, an interview and documentary on the music of this person. Charles Spearin, Canadian musician based out of Toronto, founding member of Do Make Say Think. Also, along with Kevin Drew, he formed KC Accidental. He contributes to Broken Social Scene and Valley of the Giants. He's best known. If you've ever seen Broken Social before, you might know him as the mustache guy. He's got this very, very, very incredible mustache. But his newest album and his first foray into solo music, like just with his own on his own name, is an incredible record that's about to be released. It's going to, the street date is February 14th. It's entitled The Happiness Project, in which where he had some interviews with his neighbors and found the musical cadence in their voices as they spoke. And then he actually put their voices to music. And, well, we have a chat about this. This is an interview with Charles Spearin on A Noise.
Happiness is love. Happiness is love. Love make you keep happy. You can't just love yourself and you don't love other people. You got to love people. And the love is right there. It make you feel happy to know that you're my neighbor. And I love you. And you could able to come over today to invite me over. What do you think that is? I'm feeling happy.
Same.
Yes.
Simple recipe,
yes, I'm feeling happy to know that, you know, somebody cares. And that's a big love. You know, I can come out through the door and I say, good morning. What makes you feel so happy, right? Oh, love. That's what I find it is. Make you happy. I come out in the morning, I see Mr. Gary. I can say, good morning, Mr. Gary. I can sit and talk to him because I'm happy. I can go back in and I can smile and say, oh, we were changing tone this morning. Hey? So nice. So good. I love that. Love makes you happy.
Can I get your name, age, and occupation, please?
My name is Charles Spearin. I'm 36 years old. And I'm a musician. I started playing guitar when I was 13 and kept playing guitar. Started a band when I was 16. The band was called the Dead Lemmings, kind of a high school punk band, and that was lasted for 5 years or so. And then I had a mediocre career as a live sound technician, but I still did music as well. And eventually went to recording engineering school and studied production and engineering, and at around the same time I started a band with my roommates, my new roommates, Justin Small and James Payment, and we called ourselves Do Make Say Think. That was about 95.
Can you give us a description of what Do Make Say Think's very first performance? I know it had something to do with a Canadian dramatic production or whatever, but can you elaborate on it? Because it sounds pretty fascinating.
There's some rumors. I've heard a bunch of different versions of the story, but the truth is our first few shows were actually at raves, because of course in 1995 raves were in full swing in Toronto, where you know they'd pass around flyers and then you would meet at some secret location and then everybody would be bused to a different location and then there would be this massive party and crazy DJs, and then there would be kind of a chill out room and we would be the chill out room band. We did that a couple times.
How was the response at those kind of events?
Fairly catatonic. That's what we were going for.
Thank you.
How did Do Make Say Think get involved with the Constellation Godspeed kind of crowd or whatever?
Let's see. Well, the story goes is that one of the people in Godspeed bought our record at probably Rotate This in Toronto and brought it back to Constellation Records because we released it independently. We released it ourselves. We just made 500 copies and put it in local record stores. And anyway, it got back to Constellation, and they really seemed to like it. So they contacted us and came down, and they saw us play live, not at a rave. That was we only did that a couple times. But they came and they saw the show, and so we had met with them a couple times, and we liked their aesthetic and we liked their social idealisms, and decided that it would be a good match.
Once you got involved with being distributed on Constellation, did you feel like there was a certain stigma attached to it? Like, did you feel that you had to put out these elaborately packaged kind of conceptual albums? Kind of like it seemed to be the want of the label. It seemed. How do you feel about that?
Well, we really admire the Constellation aesthetic. We really liked the way. Really two guys in the label, and they put a lot of care into the packaging, and they put a lot of care into the presentation, and they put a lot of care into the music and the bands and how everybody is treated and just respected. There's ways to exploit music, and then there's ways to exploit music that's appropriate, and they seem to do a good job, so we were quite happy with the way we worked with them. They still are.
Thank you. Were you on tour with Godspeed during the infamous terrorist scare in Oklahoma?
No, we weren't with them on that tour. I know that one well. I believe they were at a gas station. I think they were just on tour, and they stopped at a gas station, and they got out of their van and with their scruff and their trench coats and their big beards and long hair, and somebody called in a terrorist alert, and they got called in by the police, and they got brought to the station and interrogated for 12 hours or something like that about what they're doing, and they went through, of course, all their records and their...
Well, these violin cases actually have violins in
them. Yeah, these violin cases actually have violins in them, and if you look at the Godspeed, or the... is it the Godspeed one? Yeah, the Godspeed Yankee UXO record. It has that that flyer on the inside. It says if it's put out by the FBI or something like that. It reports suspicious behaviors and things like that.
The following song is intended to be heard in the vein of political satire in reference to the previous conversation and does not represent the views of Annoyz or CITR 101.9 FM. Let's talk about the new album. The Happiness Project is entitled. Can you give us history on how this record came to exist?
Well, for a long time I've been wanting to make music based on speech. I think a lot of people sort of sing when they speak. If you listen to people when they get excited, there's all kinds of natural, beautiful cadences in people's voice. And people don't really pay attention to it when they're talking. Their voice goes up and down, and they're very expressive, but they're not singing, so they're just paying attention to the meaning of their words. They're not particularly paying attention to the sound of their words. And so I wanted to find a way of taking these little accidental melodies and turning them into songs. So I invited my neighbors over. I live in downtown Toronto. And I basically just started asking them questions, about life, and tried to steer the questions towards something maybe a little bit more philosophical than, say, talking about the weather. So, and I wanted to stay away from talking about religion or politics or anything like that, because they're a little bit inflammatory, and it's nice to just have your neighbors over and talk about happiness. And so I recorded the voices and listened back for moments within the interview that had both a nice cadence and an interesting meaning. And then I would figure out how to play the cadence of their voice on different instruments. I did some of it myself and some of it with the help of my musician friends. And then basically took these melodies and arranged them as though they were songs.
I believe I've learned more. I have a part-time job with challenged young women, and they're happy all the time. They're happy all the time, and I say. sisters so simplistic. Not to say simplicity because they're challenged. No. It's like they don't ask beyond of what's present. It's like they don't ask beyond of what's present. It's like they don't ask beyond of what's present. It's like they don't ask beyond of what's present.
First thing I thought of when I put on your record was Different Trains by Steve Reich and Kronos mm-hmm. Quartet. Was there any influence in there at all? Or?
Well, there was. It's in a way, I've been wanting to do this project for a very long time, and I've always been sort of in love with the sound of well, just this accidental sounds of, that sound very musical in life. And so I've been thinking about doing this project with a sound with using speech and that sort of thing. And then I came across Different Trains by Steve Reich, and it kind of put a little wind into my sails. So like, oh wow, that's amazing, and it really is possible to take it. 'Cause he only used a few. He would use 3 seconds as the whole piece. Mm-hmm. Different Trains every time, and then he would say, from New York to Chicago, mm-hmm. different samples, and they're just. Just sort of snippets, and I wanted to see if I could use more and do actual conversation the same way.
crack train to New York. 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 Crack train to New York. New York. Crack train to New York. Crack train to New York. New York. Crack train to New York. Crack train to New York. New York. Crack train to New York. Crack train to New York. New York. Crack train to New York.
1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940, 1940
I dug a little bit deeper in the history of this kind of music, the voice, like using cadence and voices and putting music behind it. Have you heard of a piece called John Somebody by Scott Johnson?
I've heard of it. I haven't heard it.
Okay, it's on Zadok, and it was released actually in 1986, so 3 years prior to Different Trains, and it was done entirely with analog tape loops. And the biggest rave that most reviews have been saying about it is that he used to play it live, and he would keep, like, it being analog, it made it very, very difficult for him to keep up with the actual, you know, how the time shift and stuff like that.
Right.
How did you record your voice treatments?
It was done digitally on Pro Tools.
Okay, can I suck you into the analog versus digital argument, or does that argument even exist anymore?
I don't think it exists anymore. I mean, it's the digital is just too convenient, and it sounds good, and it just makes it just opens up too many possibilities. I spend years and years recording on analog, and I still love it. I think it's great, but it's just the convenience of digital has won over.
You know who's in New York? Remember that guy, John somebody? He was sort of a... John somebody?
Did you actually transcribe the voice samples onto like dots on paper for the musicians to play along or anything?
No, I didn't do that. I did a little bit that. We've done a little bit of that now because we're trying to figure out how to play it live. But when for the recording process, basically we would listen to, you know, 3 or 4 seconds at a time and loop it. And when you loop music, when you loop speech, you can really hear the melody in it quite clearly. So we would figure out 4 seconds at a time what the melody is and then move on to the next 4 seconds until we've got the whole whatever minute of conversation that I wanted to do.
I was born deaf, so you know, people often ask me over the years, what do you hear? And I couldn't really answer because I didn't know what it was like to hear. So how can I compare? It was just the way life was for me, the way the world worked for me. So it's very natural for me not to hear in the way you would hear. Lip reading came very naturally to me, very sensitive to vibration, the movement of air in the house. I could be up there and I could tell when somebody, a particular person, comes in the house because I can smell. Anyway, so I was very happy the way I was fine. I was a happy person.
Thank you.
then when I got the cochlear implant, they implanted electrodes. So I have 16 electrodes inserted in my cochlea. So that way the matches can be sent directly to my brain. It's a big surgery, you know, they draw a hole and, you know, they make a little bed for the magnet because I have a computer microchip.
You have a microchip in your head?
Yeah, it's inside.
And that attaches by a magnet?
Yeah, the magnet is on the outside to pick up the sound. Mm. But the sound goes in and then it processes through here, then it's sent through the computer microchip, through the electrodes into my brain. So after the surgery, I had to wait 4 weeks for everything to sort of rest in place. And then I was turned on. And I didn't hear anything. I thought, oh my God. But you know what? I could not hear sound, as we know. But I think what was happening was my brain didn't know what to do with the information. But all of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body moving inside. All of a sudden, I felt my body. Sound is electricity. And then I learned that sound is electricity. And then I learned that sound is electricity. And all these different sounds move differently inside our body. I thought maybe I could sense it more because I didn't hear anything for over 30 years. So, for the first time, wow, these different sounds are doing different things to my body. So, I have a battery, and it only lasts maybe 4 to 8 hours at a time. So when it goes off, all of a sudden, everything in my body is still. Yeah. And I now understand the term dead sounds.
What do you want to end the show on here?
I have no idea. Play something beepy and glitchy from the 90s for me.
All right.